Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Hello and welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joshua. That sounded a little too evangelical.
Like, do we, right? Do we remember how to do this?
I don't know. I mean, it took us 10 minutes longer than usual to get set up
because the cord was just roaming free.
Yes. And, is it plugged in? We don't know.
What is that buzzing? I have no idea.
Yes. Two different types of buzzing in here.
Yeah. So fun.
Oh, my Jesus.
Yes.
We have returned.
We have returned, so thank you all for waiting.
For being patient. Did you notice?
Right.
Was there a void? Is there a void? Two queers talking about horror that that you missed?
I hope there was a void. I hope the people missed us.
I agree. I definitely know we were missed by some.
Yes. I kept meaning to put out, but you know, like how it goes, you don't like think about a lot of things, but we had to take a break because unfortunately my mother passed away, and so it's been a difficult month or so, and so we had to pop a pause on Fright School while I reorganized the disaster that my life has been the last bit of time, but I'm really looking forward to getting back on track. I really love doing this, and so I missed you, Joe.
I know,
and I missed the horror. And so, as many of you know, our longtime listeners know, I have my love of horror from my mom, and you know, I can continue to do the show now in her memory and her honor. In a sense, so I know that she would want me to continue to spread horror to the masses.
Good.
So I continue on, but yeah, it's been a very interesting, experience going through this. So
no, I am sure.
So I do want to send a thank you, big thank you to everybody who has reached out, who we know personally and do know what's going on. You know, there were so many kind words, the creeps, you know, they were all so kind.
Yes, and our creepy friends.
Yeah, the people who make up our little podcast family. That's from the Jersey Ghouls and Horror Movie Night. We really, really appreciate you all. I appreciate you all, I should say. For
yeah, I can take or leave you guys.
but no, seriously, it's been it's. You know, when you go through something like this and just, you know, all the support that comes out, you know, it's just, it's been very, very healing, you know, more so than I thought it would be. Because I always thought I'd be, you know, in that situation where it's like, oh, you know, I don't want to be, there are certain things you think you don't want to hear. But then in those moments, it's like, actually, this is very helpful.
Yes.
So anyways, that's, you know, all I will say on that, I just wanted to give an explanation about why we were gone, and you know that I just want to continue doing the show because it's so much fun and it's a good thing in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of my favorite things in the entire world, and I'm so blessed that I got to meet her earlier this year when she visited, and.
Yeah.
And to, you know, nod my head and be like, oh, that's where that's where it comes from.
I have you to blame for all
it's
this.
You. It's all making sense. And so I was very lucky to have met her. And So, yes, we love you. We love you, Becky.
Yeah, she will. She is greatly missed. But so moving on, it has been a very busy month for you, because while I've been off in Griefland, you're just seeing all the horror movies without me.
Yeah. Yes, it's like,
how much can I use this to guilt you? No.
You know what? I did. Every time I saw a movie without you, Joshua, I was like, oh, it was like, it felt dirty. It's like, it's,
good, it should.
It was like, you know who would really like to be here? Joshua, but yeah. I really, like, so, you know, but I will say, you know, I will say that.
That your life has to go on, Joe.
That, hey.
You have to do things.
I do have to do things, but you should be very proud that now I am solo seeking out horror on my own.
I am very proud.
This is how I will reframe it.
Right. So what all did you see?
So I saw Little Monsters on, we'll go all the way back to Halloween, right? So okay. I saw Little Monsters on Hulu with Lupita Nyong'o, which was very, very, very good.
Yeah.
She does really well. It's kind of like Life is Beautiful and Shaun of the Dead, like, mixed together, because she's a kindergarten teacher in Australia. And the zombie apocalypse is happening while they're at a petting zoo, and she's trying to hide that from the kids.
Trying to protect them from the
horror. Trying to protect them from the horror. So she's like, you know, she comes back after, like, going out, and she's covered in blood. And this is a bright yellow dress, but, like, covered in blood. And they're like, what is that, you know, Miss Caroline? And it's like, oh, it's jam! Don't touch it! And so that's fun. Josh Gad is in it. He plays, like, this really creepy, like, Mr. Rogers, Muppets, Sesame Street type character who ends up being a dick. Like, you know, they all are.
Cool.
And she plays the ukulele and sings Taylor Swift songs. Like, it's really fun.
All right. First, so, we recommend?
Recommend. First right. 10 minutes is hard. It's like when you watch The Babadook and you want to turn it off, because it's like you don't care about it. It kind of centers around this one guy and we don't really care about him. But once Lupita shows up, stick with it, because it's really great. So, yes, recommend.
Cool.
Little All Monsters.
Right. Well, we'll put that on the list. Actually, well, it is actually on my list.
You know what I didn't, you know what I don't recommend? Countdown.
Yeah.
Yes, the one about the app that kills people, that tells you.
It didn't look exciting to
no,
me.
No, it was not exciting at all. And I have to agree with, I think it was Matt from Horror Movie Night who said, like, Countdown was a great movie until, like, you get to, like, the middle or, like, towards the end or something mm-hmm. like that. Like, there's, it really doesn't make much sense, and like, and it's my favorite trope. My favorite trope of horror is like, what is the side trauma that's informing the horror, you know, like,
yeah,
Sydney's mom losing her mom and Scream and all that stuff, and this one really plays that up. So but yeah, no, don't recommend. You know, watch it when it's on Shudder in a couple months,
right?
But don't pay
any
more. Don't
rush out.
Don't rush out and don't pay any extra money to see it. It does have Peter Facinelli in it. So, you know.
Well, look at him getting a paycheck.
Exactly. He's not, the main villain is death. You know, like Final Destination. But he's like the second, he's like the tertiary villain. And so it's really great. He's really great in it.
Have I ever seen him play a villain? I mean, he was such an epic douchebag on Nurse Jackie, but I wouldn't call him the antagonist. So
he does play a doctor in this one again. So
good for him.
And then of course the one that I really felt really bad seeing without you was Dr. Sleep.
Yeah. You should.
Let's just sit with that. let's just sit with our guilt for a little bit.
Guilt.
I also felt really bad because I preferred Dr. Sleep over The Shining.
Hey, that's all right. You know, you're, you know, a millennial.
Well, it's like, well, Joe, famously, it's have no taste.
It's probably much faster paced.
No, it was, well, I mean, yes, it was a faster pace. It's still, like, long. And yeah. It's still an epic movie. But I felt like there was just, it was more interesting and more, it was more dynamic.
Yeah.
In it. Plus, I have to give props to the girl who played Abra in it. Like, she was very good. Reminded me a lot of one of my nieces.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, really good. Ewan McGregor is Ewan McGregor. You know, take him or leave him. And then the woman who played Rose the Hat was just, love it.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to seeing it. One, because that was the, like, after I'm a big fan of Stephen King, especially, you know, 70s, 80s works, you know, and then for a while, the last great book I thought that Stephen King had written was The Green Mile, and that came out in like 93 or 94.
Yeah.
Well, it was like a series of novels, and then I got it for the holidays. When the movie came out, they put it all under one book, and so that was one of my gifts that year. And I spent all day in bed reading it because I just, it was so good. It's such a great book. But that was like the last, for a long time, you know, I tried to read some of his other stuff, Cell, and I was like, ugh, this is awful. And you just, some of his other books.
Into the Dark Tower series, or? Is that
well, even either? The Dark Tower series just took a weird left turn and was just, it was just weird, you know? And so I just felt like it's like he's just writing to write or something. And then Dr. Sleep came out and, you know, it was like, oh, this is a sequel to The Shining, which I thought, hey, how cool is that? I will read that, because I remember reading The Shining when I was like probably 13 or 14. So I was very excited to kind of revisit those characters and see, you know, because there is, when you're like certain authors and you read their work, at least for me, there's like Stephen King, Poppy Z. Bright, you know, they write these characters and you're just like, gosh, I really want to know what they're doing now, like 20 or 30 years after this novel's been written. And so this was kind of that, you know, a way to experience that, you know, like, and would I actually be satisfied with what the author has to say about these characters now? That, like, I don't remember when Dr. Sleep came out, but it was like, it, you know, over 30 years after The Shining had been released.
2013, was it?
Something like that.
It's fairly recently. Yeah. It's in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I was still working at the production studio when it came out. Because I remember reading it on the bus, and another guy had it, and he was reading it. And I was like, oh, look, you know, we're reading the same book. Isn't this exciting to get, like, a sequel to The Shining? And he goes, well, it's not really a sequel. And I was like, are you reading the book? So I stopped talking to him because it was a very strange conversation where he was like trying to argue that it wasn't a sequel to The Shining.
And King came out and was like, this is a sequel to The Shining.
Yeah, it was a bizarre conversation. So this is why I don't talk to people on the bus. You know, I just put my headphones back in. I'm like, okay, something's up with you, dude.
It's
but
like,
he was
like,
I
thought you were friends.
It was not like, you know, he's like, no, it's not a sequel to The Shining. I'm like, okay. Put my earphones back in and just back to reading my book. But anyways, so yeah, I remember reading it like back and forth on the bus and then at work on lunchtime. And I just was really, it had been a long time since I really enjoyed a Stephen King book. And again, I don't think it's up there with like the greats of some of the stuff he's written, but in the sense of like being very fast paced, moving, it reads like a film, you know? So I felt it's very adaptable. So I'm looking forward to seeing it to see how disappointed I'm going to be in that. No, I'm kidding. I've heard it's good. A lot of people that I've heard from enjoyed it.
What I appreciate about you, Joshua, is that you're very, you go into adaptations with like this open mind, you know, like you definitely want to see the book that you've read adapted, you know, in the way it like just, you know, a straight adaptation. I know that you don't appreciate when they take certain licenses.
It just depends, because it's like, it pisses me off when it's like, we love this book so much that we're going to invest, you know, $100 million to adapt it, but we think we know better than the author. And so we're going to change all these elements of the story. I'm like, then what the fuck? Then just write something new. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
absolutely.
Because you go in, because they go, oh, we want to be surprised, or we don't want people to think, you know, to think they already know it. But it's like, readers, people who love something, that's, they want to see it adapted. You know, they want to see, you know, it play out that way, you know, like it played out in our heads. At least I do. Maybe not everybody, but I can still accept a work for what it is. The original Shining, I think, is a great film. It has nothing to do with the novel in a lot of sense. You know, there's a lot of changes, you know, but they exist kind of separately, you know, whereas like Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist, they just took those books and, I mean, they were a screenplay, you know, practically. And they were also successful films where people had read the books and knew what to expect. And it was still, I mean, Oscar-worthy material, you know. So I just think there's, I don't know, there's like an argument for both ways, you know. If anything, I hope that people see the movie and go, oh, it's a book. Well, I'll read the book, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that cross fingers. I don't know if that happens as much as as much as I dream it does, that people rush out and buy books from local bookstores.
Yes, from a local independent.
Yes, it's that time of year, so support local authors when you're out buying things. Buying gifties.
Gifties out there.
So, but anyways, back to Dr. Sleep. What? So you recommend it?
I do recommend. I saw it at the. I saw it at a drive-in.
Oh, cool!
I saw it at a drive-in.
Oh my gosh, I love drive-ins.
And we should go. Yeah. We should go one day. It's so much fun. Saw it at a drive-in, and when you go to the drive-in, at least the one in Santee, it's a double feature. So, you know, you get two movies for like $9.
What was the other movie?
Joker.
Oh, weird.
It was five hours of like, it was the Sunday.
Sounds like an intense.
Yeah, it was a very intense time. And I went with the gentleman I'm seeing too. So it was like.
Gentleman. Lucky
yes.
you. Found
yes,
a gentleman.
I did. Hi, babe. I know he listens. And.
Did you say babe or bae?
I said babe. I don't say babe. I'm not a Gen Z, okay?
I was just checking.
I'm a millennial. What would you say in your... What is your generation? Generation...
Say, hey, you old fucker. No, I'm kidding. No, the problem is that we have lots of different...
Yes.
You know, because I call him the Sam Squanch, and then a million iterations of
it. Yes, Squancher.
Yeah, the Squancher, Squanch Magoo, you know.
I don't think I've heard that
one.
Yeah,
the other day, we were watching The Crown, so I was calling him Squanchminster Krabby. he calls me Cabbage a lot. Cabbage. Cabbage. And has for years, way before The Crown, because he always swore up and down that that is what Prince Philip called the Queen. So he, like a term of endearment.
And so then The Crown validated that?
Yeah, when he was calling her that, I'm like, oh, you were actually right. Well, at least it's they like, also are under the impression that she's called Cabbage.
When Colonel Adine comes in, because, you know, Philip is on the intercom.
Oh, sweetie.
She's like, I'm not. He's like, I'm Cabbage. I'm Darling or Cabbage. Sweetie is not me. Sweetie is someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. So, have you look at that? We're taking like a weird turn. Where were we? We were talking about
Dr. Sleep,
and at the drive-in. First of all, how was the sound at the drive-in?
It's good because the car had really great speakers. So
it comes through the radio.
It comes through the radio, which is totally great. I was a little concerned that because we were running off the battery, and I was a little concerned with those 4 hour, you know, like 5 hours we were there, that it was going to be the battery was going to die. But it was fine, you know. His car held up great. I will say that for Dr. Sleep specifically, maybe not in the drive-in, just because it's dark. Like, it's a lot of darkness. Mm. And it was a pretty dark night, so it was...
Yeah, but there could be a lot of light pollution stuff.
Exactly. And the thing I like about the Santee one is that it's actually fairly dark in that area. Like, there isn't street lights that are bleeding through. So maybe... And, you know, we got there a little later, so we were towards the back, but maybe we should have... Next time, we'll probably go towards the front if it's something like that. But, it was really good sound. Like
the last time I went,
and we watched it in the car. Like we didn't go. We weren't those people who like put the hitch on their trucks.
Oh, right.
Watched it in the car with the full surround, which was really great.
That is cool. Yeah, I bet that sounded really cool then. Yeah, the last time I went, I saw it was in Ohio. That was the last time I went to a drive-in. So it's been years, probably 15 years. But we saw Signs.
Oh,
and Swing the Texas Away. Chainsaw Massacre, like the remake of it, they paired those because the drive-in was in the middle of a cornfield, like in the middle, you know what I mean? Like out in the middle of, you know, Ohio. It was very creepy and very fun. And we were in a convertible, Mustang convertible.
Oh,
so like the top was down. It was just really freaky.
Did you have like one of those little things, like the little
no,
sound
it played
boxes?
On the stereo too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like a radio. When I was a kid, I remember those though, where you'd have to pull up next to the thing, and it was just terrible. Like, you know,
I need to take my parents to a drive-in one day because I was telling them I was going, and they were just like, "Oh my gosh!" Like talking about
memories.
Yeah, exactly. Like the corner of their mind. Like it used to be they used to pay by car, and we would put people in the trunk. And I was like, "That sounds awful. That sounds like human trafficking." But yes, I need to take them. Can we pivot to The Crown? Can we go back to
Crown?
Oh,
yes, yes, we can go back to The Crown. Have you finished the third season?
Yes, I have finished. You finished, right? Are they trying to make us feel sorry for Charles?
You know, I don't know. I feel like they're going to hit us with a blow next season, you know, when he's like a piece of garbage.
Yes, exactly. But like, but he's...
Well, so, I guess maybe they won't get to that.
Well, I think it's going to be when two more seasons, because the announcement was made that Imelda Staunton is going to play the Queen.
That's not been announced.
Or I
that's
saw
the rumor.
The rumor.
Netflix said there's no like validity to the rumor because they haven't even started production. But who knows?
I mean,
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah,
yeah. She put Umbridge, right? Or,
yes.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would like Dame Judy or
Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren to come back,
yeah.
And then
she
Imelda
put the
Staunton.
Kibosh on that.
Aw,
yeah.
Imelda Staunton would make a great Margaret, I think. So, but yeah, I felt
they'll find someone.
I liked Tony a lot more in this season than I did last season. I thought that was really strange. Maybe it's also because I think Matthew Good, they just get him to play like any like English asshole. So
it didn't have enough Helena Bonham Carter.
No, did not.
Yeah, I need me some more HBC.
She got her two really great episodes.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, but it was like the beginning of the season and the end of the season. I was just kind of bummed, and then they just kind of had her in to make, you know, a catty remark every now and then. So I was a little disappointed in that. The whales episode turned out to be really good because in the was it the first season? Either the first or second season had a whole episode devoted to Philip going, like, when he was younger at the boys' school and all that. And I just hated that episode. I was so bored by it because I don't care. It's like, I just, whatever. So I was really worried.
We really don't care about Philip.
Well, to be honest, I watched The Crown because I'm very fascinated just by the way that they're playing with, like, you know, women in power, you know? And you know, the dynamics of the female characters, obviously. I mean, you know, come on.
I like The Crown because I like how it plays with memory.
Well, yeah.
The memory and history, because this is the very recent past. I mean,
true.
For the most part, you know, it's the 50s and the 60s.
I mean, I think The Crown is mostly a load of bullshit. You know, I mean, it's very fictionalized. They're kind of taken like, we know these things happen and we're just guessing at what's, you know, going on behind. But it's still a fascinating drama and a fascinating examination of a very powerful institution sort of in decline, especially within relevancy to actual modern politics. You know?
Absolutely.
So I find that interesting. But anyway, so when they did the whales episode, I thought, oh God, this is going to be just like that Philip one. It's going to be boring as shit. And then it turned out to be really interesting. So I actually enjoyed that episode, even though there's hardly any Margaret in it.
I know. I was like, oh, like, am I supposed to feel sorry for Charles?
I think in general, it's really weird. It plays on that because like I'm very anti-monarchy, obviously. I'm anti, you know, most of what's going on in the world.
You're the Welsh Tudor.
Yeah, it's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to be watching this during this time that I've been going, because it's like been a really nice place to filter anger, you know, just like, I fucking hate you people.
Yes.
Like Philip sitting in that grand ballroom of a fucking dining room surrounded by fresh flowers and gold and gilt-edged bullshit and, you know, oh, we're so poor and we need money. It's like, fuck off, you. You know, so like
I can barely do this.
Yes, we've been on the same thing for 15 years. Already. I was just so annoyed. You know, it's like, oh God, I hate these people. You know, so but it plays with that. It's like you do also feel sorry because it's like they're, you know, products of an institution that was created before them, and they happen by blood to be born into it. And so there are moments like there's that whole thing with Olivia. With the Queen, you know, going and seeing Porchy and getting a view of what her life could have been like had she not been weighed down by the crown. And although it took me a while to figure, because I don't know, I must have either stepped out to the bathroom or something, so I missed like identifying that was Porchy, and that was the problem with this season is I had to relearn who everybody was again, and it was already difficult enough for me.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly.
And Jeffrey, you know, he's a hardcore Anglophile, so he's all like, you know, oh well, that's the Duke of Edinburgh from blah blah, or I guess that's actually Philip, isn't it?
Yeah.
whatever. But, you know, it was like they'd say something. I'm like, who the fuck is that? And he'd be like, well, that's, you know, the queen's uncle's, you know, godson. Yes. You know? I'm like, what? You know, like he knows who all these
that's
people
Martin
are.
That's Martin Charteris.
Right.
That's
clearly.
That's Michael Adeen.
You know, so that was like the first two seasons. So it's like I just got a hold of like who everybody was and they changed all of them. So when she's hanging out with that guy, we're sitting there and I'm like watching the episode. And it's going and going and going. And then finally, like, there came a moment towards the end where she called him Porchy or Porchester or something. And I was like, that's Porchy? And just like, where the fuck have you been? I'm like, I don't know. I just, because they changed every fucking body.
Well, I just,
except Lithgow.
Yeah, exactly. Except for him, because then, you know, he's, because he was already decrepit. He was already in decrepit too.
Yeah, who the hell are they going to get to play him?
Which like scene stealer where he's just you know
just chews it up he and Helena.
I have to say that like the Porchy was like a more svelte Porchy than from the last two seasons, but I love that like anytime they want to show how she would have been if she had not been ascended to the throne, it's always like they would just wheel in Porchy.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, throw on a horse farm somewhere.
Exactly.
And, you know, she's like, oh, I could have been so hippie.
But like
it's so hippie
that
here
was
with you,
insane that like you are the sovereign of a constitutional monarchy. But let's just take a month off to go look at horses.
Yeah, why not? I know. Yeah,
I did love that Tywin Lannister came back and was trying to fuck everyone.
Oh,
shit
I know. Yeah, that was kind of cool. Yeah, it's very very fascinating. The show, and I love it because I love to hate the people in it, so it's fun.
So I maybe I'll have to ask Squencher about this, but if Dickie, Lord Mountbatten, is the Queen's second cousin, and he is Charles's, or he is Philip's uncle, then incest is happening, right? Mm-hmm. Some sort of royal monarchy incest is happening, right?
Yeah, if a man gets in a rowboat going 20 miles
shut up
an hour and the current is moving 40 miles. That's how I constantly feel watching this because I'm always trying to figure out who the hell people are. Yes, they're all, it's all incest.
Yeah, okay.
Like the cousin, they're like, are the queen and Philip are like second cousins or something, aren't they?
Yeah, because it's like the queen's second cousin
is
Lord Mountbatten, but Lord Mountbatten is the brother of Princess Alice, who is, you know.
Yeah. No, it's...
Who was in Footloose with Kevin Bacon, so...
Boom, look at that.
A breakout star of the
crown.
Were any
of them in anything with Michael Keaton? We could Beetlejuice this, too, for Brian of Horror Movie Night.
You could get there with Helena Bonham Carter. You really could.
That's true, because...
You could probably get there.
Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Boom. Who she does not want to discuss. She doesn't want to talk about him anymore.
Breakout star was Princess Anne.
She's the best, and she's like, all she has to do is...
Yeah. A bit of fun. Sorry, mommy.
Oh. Yeah, I really liked her. Jeffrey, like, almost fell out of his chair, because he was like, she looks just like her.
She
so
looks
then we looked
exactly,
up pictures, it's like,
yeah.
Damn, you know? And just her whole, like...
She has, like, forehead, and then, like, when they introduce her, and she's, like, walking with her, like, riding boots, I was like... There's our future Olympian right there.
Yeah.
Future Olympic silver medalist right there.
Yeah, I dig it. I dig it. So, Well, it's related to horror, and the British monarchy is responsible for genocide and horror in the world. So it's okay. We can link this in. This is like a history.
Yes. This is, you know.
Horror history.
Horror history.
Their behavior
we have a lot to catch up on.
Countless things,
yeah.
You know.
We don't have drag right now. There's no drag.
I watched the UK drag.
I did not watch the UK drag.
Yeah, it was thoroughly enjoyable.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to tell sometimes what they're saying, so I recommend, you know.
With the subtitles.
Well, because they're from all kinds of different places. And so there's like 50 different accents going on in nine queens.
Yes.
So it's like, it was hard to like, you know, sometimes, you know. But it's quotable as shit. There's definitely moments where I'm like, oh my god, write that down. Yeah, it was enjoyable. Yeah, I watched it over, I was getting together with a coworker who had WoW Presents Plus. But then I found out you could get it for like 30 days trial for free, so I got that anyways.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, and I've already kind of watched everything on it, so I might have to cancel it and get it again when there's a new, you know. It's just, I don't know, there's a lot of garbage on there. There is a whole, like, documentary series of behind the scenes of the Work the World tour that is pretty cool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'd recommend that for you because you enjoy the queens.
I do enjoy
and it's like
a touring queen.
It focuses on each one. So it's like Valentina gets an episode and Sharon Needles and Latrice Royale and Detox, and it's just all of them, like 9 or 10 of them. Alyssa Edwards, Shangela, obviously, who co-produced the tour. She's Ooh. Like this boss, you know, besides the whatever his name is.
Get a check. Hallelujah. Like,
I know, right? Good for her.
What are you watching on Disney Plus?
Nothing except The Mandalorian. yeah, you know, it's so funny. I'm playing this game of like, what Disney film have I never seen that I can fall asleep to in 20 minutes? So yeah, I've been going through it. It's funny because it's still learning me, you know, so it's like offering me, you know, stuff that I'm like, I would never fucking watch that. I'm trying to, get caught up on the Star Wars movies because I've seen the originals and then I saw The Phantom Menace. And then that was it, besides, like, the new trilogy. So I haven't seen
Revenge of the Sith. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't see either of those.
Okay.
So I rewatched The Phantom Menace just to, you know, kind of remind myself of what happened in that.
And the midichlorians and all that?
Right. And the fantastic fashions of Queen Amidala.
Yes.
Who I mean, if I could, I would just be inspired by her. Just wear some long robes and weird hair.
Yes. Your makeup with the one red
yes,
lip.
Yes, I love
line.
It. It's wonderful. But, yeah, so I'm trying to get the time, like, you know, to watch it. You know, mm-hmm. just watch the other two movies so that I'm kind of finally all caught up, you know, on the Star Wars stuff. Enjoying The Mandalorian. It reminds me a lot of Firefly, in a way,
because
it's just sort of like, you know, it's episodic and, you know, his adventures. And, of course, the child is hysterical and an endless source of memeage and fun. Are you watching or no?
No, I'm not watching The Mandalorian. Okay. But The child is the Baby Yoda?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The subtitles, it's always, the child coos, the child laughs. So I'm calling him the child, but he's endlessly entertaining. He looks a lot like my cats.
He does.
So it's very entertaining, especially to push their little ears to the side and then they look just like him. And he's just every time he comes, it like he had like the novelty has not wore off. Like, we got together last night to watch the latest episode with a couple friends, and just every time he shows up on screen, it's just, you just start laughing, or everything he does, it's not wearing off. He's still cute as fuck.
I started watching Encore with Kristen Bell. It's a reality.
That was a 360.
Yes, a reality.
Changing.
It's a reality show about, a group, they basically take a bunch of people who performed a musical in high school, and then they make them perform it again when they're, like, grown-ass adults.
I've had, like, a nightmare like that.
So the first episode it's, like, a group of people who, back in the 90s, were at Santana High School, which is here in San Diego County, in Santee, and they're performing Annie again. And you quickly realize that there's a lot of unhealed wounds and divisions.
So is it all about them over the season, or does it change each episode?
Every episode is a different cast. It's a different musical, different place. But in the first one, they like all get together and they talk about what they've been doing since. And
but you haven't seen Waiting for Guffman.
It's very... No, I have not, but I've been told that it has a lot of Waiting for Guffman feels.
Yeah, because that's kind of what, like, community theater in general.
It's great because, like, their director comes in and she's like, hi, I'm so-and-so. You know, I recently directed the, you know, whatever revival of Ragtime. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was nominated for a Tony. I'm like, oh, God, Joshua would love this. So there you go.
All right. Well,
something for you to watch.
I will have to check it out. I thought Matt from Horror Movie Night posted about that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
He really was enjoying it. So.
And then, of course, I had to watch one of my more obscure Disney films right away, which is the sequel to Aladdin, straight to video sequel to Aladdin called
The Return of Jafar.
Return of Jafar.
I remember that.
And I can't believe I still remember the words to a lot of those songs.
Aladdin was actually the first thing I watched on it once we downloaded it and was kind of looking through it. So, I watched about 20 minutes of it, and then I woke up. And
I'm
going
to have to introduce you to a couple of, like, quote-unquote scary movies from the Disney Channel original movie canon. Mm-hmm. So, maybe I'll do that for you later.
We'll review those.
Yeah.
We just need to start a whole new show, and it'll be...
Joe shows Joshua Disney stuff. It'll be extra delectable Patreon content,
like,
or something.
Mouseketeer College or something. I don't know what you call it, but anyways.
exactly. It's the Disney after school program.
Right,
of
exactly.
Friends school.
Yeah. exactly. Because, yeah, there's so much on there that I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, I don't even know. I don't recognize any of these movies, you know? I mean, I remember the big ones in the 90s. Because I do, there's a couple Disney films I love. The Lion King, The Little Mermaid. I think I've said that before on the show. You know, so they're on there. Beauty and the Beast. I have seen Beauty and the Beast. And Aladdin I had seen before as a kid. I've even seen Return of Jafar.
Have you seen Aladdin and the King of Thieves?
No.
Okay, which that's the third film in the trilogy.
Is that where Robin Williams comes back?
Robin Williams does come back.
Yeah,
because
he didn't.
No,
Return of Jafar.
And the thing is that you can hear especially in Jasmine's voice and in the genie's voice that they are not the original actors.
Right.
And then, you know, the kind of complicated racial politics of having Jason Alexander play a character named Abysmal.
There's lots of, yeah, exactly. Lots of problematic things. It's so funny that they were talking about Disney putting like a warning on some of their older films from like the 40s and 50s. I'm like, you could put that on the 90s as well.
Yeah.
And now. There should be lots of warnings on Disney films about problematic content.
Yeah.
But regardless, I bought it because I knew Jeffrey could not survive without seeing The Mandalorian. He could not be left out. And then they have all the other Star Wars content that he loves. So $7 a month to make him feel like a 12-year-old boy is not, it's not too high a cost.
No.
You know? It's a price I'm willing to pay.
Yes.
You know, to make him happy.
And Disney is horrifying in many ways. So there we go. We linked it.
Yeah, yeah. And Star Wars has lots of cool, creepy things. So
yeah.
I enjoy. but yeah, other than that, I haven't been over the last few weeks. You know, it's just TV, movies. Everything is kind of dangerous. You know, the world, just because of, you know. I keep finding myself like bursting into tears over episodes of The Golden Girls. So I have to be careful about like what I watch, you know? So it's been a weird time, you know, like I said, it's either been like The Crown to channel like Rage or The Mandalorian or like Drag Race. Although Drag Race had a whole episode where they brought in a couple of the moms of the drag queens to like
Aww.
Do a makeover, you know? And I was like, oh shit. And I was with my coworker, his partner, and then their friend, and I thought, oh my god, I cannot like have like an emotional breakdown watching this episode with them, you know. So I kind of like steeled myself against it, but then it was so awkward, and like, because one of the moms kind of reminded me of my mom, and some of like, you know, she was like, just some of the behaviors, and I thought, oh god, this is gonna be like one of those moments where it like mirrors our relationship, and I'm just gonna be very upset and blah blah blah, It didn't. It got really kind of awkward between them. And I was like, oh, okay. This is not giving me those sort of like, you know, miss my mom feels. Because it wasn't. You know, it was just a strange interaction. You know, so. But in general, it's like been hard to like watch certain things, you know. Mm-hmm. And like horror, definitely. There's been a few times where it's like, oh, I want to watch something. And then it's like I have memories of like watching it together. You know. So it's just been, it's been a weird time.
Yeah.
Well, we had that lovely day where we watched Heathers and Jawbreaker.
Yes, we
did.
That
was a very nice time.
We just like, you know, I was like, oh, this is what I miss. I just miss hanging out.
Yeah.
And so we watched what? Heathers, Jawbreaker,
yeah.
Urban Legend.
That's right. It was a fun day.
Yeah, that was a really fun day.
Yeah, yeah. And it was nice with you and our sometimes Fright School correspondent Ashley.
Yes.
Joining us. I'm going to have next weekend, I'm having a like a beauty day with a friend, and we're going to watch Drop Dead Gorgeous. She's never seen
it. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. We're going to do facials and stuff. I've recently spent an enormous amount of money on Madonna's skincare line.
Oh, with the magnets?
The MDNA. So I'm looking forward to trying it all out.
Is it going
to
make you look like Madonna?
I hope not, because no. She walked right past us at the concert because she exited through the theater.
Which, by the way, Joshua did go see Madame X.
I did. It was fantastic. It really, really was. Yeah, we kind of talked a little bit about it. So now it's like I can't remember what I said already, but it was great. You know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Madonna anyways. But even I was a little like hesitant about like a theater show, cuz you know, we've usually seen her in arenas with 20, 30,000 people, being a big spectacle, moving parts and all that. Well, she managed to still have all of that in an 1800 seat theater. You
wow.
know, the just everything kept changing and moving and tons of dancers and I mean, the stage, it was just amazing, the use of the space. But yeah, she walked right past us, and I was like, you know, looking at her. I was like, wow, she does really look fantastic, you know, up close still. So
great.
Yeah. I mean, not that it, you know, should matter necessarily, but it matters to her, you know.
Yeah.
And she uses, you know, these skincare products along with, you know, having $800 million. So I was like, fuck it, my birthday's coming and I want to try it out. So we'll see. So
there we go.
So we're going to have like a facial day and watch Drop Dead Gorgeous. And maybe I might rewatch one of those others. Can't remember. I don't think she's seen Jawbreaker either. And I think she'd enjoy that.
Yeah, I think she would.
So we're going to have like a self-care day.
Yes. Hashtag.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Should we like get on with it to the actual episode now?
Let's
We've
do
been
it.
Talking forever.
We'll put a disclaimer in the notes. It's like, you can catch up with us. It's an hour in.
Right. But anyway, so I'm very, very excited. Again, we're a little behind schedule. So we had planned for November.
But we hope you can appreciate.
Right. We're still trying to give you good content. But so originally we were going to start this new unit all about natural horror, you know, when animals attack back, when nature, you know, attacks back. And so I thought we would do it throughout November, because obviously with Thanksgiving and the whole thing, it just seemed like a good time to discuss that. But we're just pushing it back. We're going to start that in December. We'll still have a scary Christmas episode.
Yeah,
we'll still do some holiday content for your earballs.
We do have the remake of Black Christmas coming out.
Yes.
So
yeah.
I'm hoping that we'll do a proper field trip on that one.
We definitely will.
I am not planning on seeing that without you. So
good. That'll be our little holiday treat. But
I still need to watch the remake with Michelle Trachtenberg. So.
Oh, yeah. I showed it last year at my scary Christmas party, but you weren't here.
I was with my family.
You were with your
I was with the other horror
family.
Yes.
But anyway, so yeah, we're very excited to have back in the studio with us Jacqueline Chesson. She is helping us kick off. You just looked at me weird. I'm right, aren't I?
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
It's like, did we record something else?
Yeah, right. It's like,
but we're kicking off our natural horror section of the show with Jaws and the very lovely Jacqueline Chesson. So stick around. So we'll be right back after these messages.
We're back! I just want to apologize. I'm sorry to everyone. I was very naive and very stupid, and I shouldn't have put other people in danger. I am so sorry for everything that has happened, because in spite of what Joshua says, it's now all my fault. I insisted our listeners subscribe to Fright School on Apple Podcasts. I insisted they leave us reviews. I insisted that they give us a 5-star rating. And it's all because of me that we're here now and we're being hunted. I love you, Mom and Dad. I am so sorry.
I only wanted to make good content for our listeners. I'm so scared. I'm going to die out here. Joshua, is that you?
Ah, and we're back. All right, so we're so happy to again have with us the lovely Jacqueline Chesson.
Hello.
We are going to talk all about 1975's Jaws, directed by the... what's a good word now for Steven Spielberg?
The obscure.
The obscure.
Yes. The
totally unknown.
The unknown, this future legend.
Wait, who directed it? I've never heard
of
him before.
I think his name is Stefan.
Right. Stefan Spielberg.
Yes.
I think is how you say it. No. Yeah. So, I mean, come on. This is just an insidious cultural touchstone here about a man-eating great white shark attacking beachgoers, although, you know, the real villain in this is that damn mayor. But anyways, we'll get to that. We'll talk about that. Joe, as always, we start with, what'd you think of Jaws? What'd you think?
I never seen Jaws. I think the closest thing to a shark movie that I ever seen was Happy Days, the literal jumping of the shark episode on Nick at Night.
This actually shocked me because this is like considered one of the greatest films ever made, according to its Wikipedia article, which Steven Spielberg may be editing. But no, I mean, it's in the Library of Congress. It's this, you know, obviously one of the highest grossing films until Star Wars, I guess, came out in 1977. So, you know, I figured you had seen this before. I was really shocked by that.
Never seen it. Well, I also, like, I'm from Guam. I'm from an island. There, like, we are from an actual island.
Are there sharks there?
There are sharks there. Funny, when I was there in October 2018, I went on a fishing trip with my brother-in-law because he's an outdoorsman and I am not. I like, what does she say in...
You're as outdoorsy as I am.
In Inglourious Basterds, it's like, I like ordering in restaurants. Like to spend time with him, we went fishing and I caught a shark. I'll post it on our Instagram.
This is amazing.
I caught a black tip shark and the first thing that I did was I took my phone out and I was like, black tip shark endangered species list ? And just to make sure I wasn't gonna get like I was wasn't committing a crime, like, yeah. So we weren't committing a crime, but it is definitely we definitely were conscious of it because it was one of those the black tip shark is not endangered, but it's threatened because it's the shark that they use for shark fin soup. I caught it and I left before it was turned into soup. But I was told it.
So you didn't even.
I was
get
told
to
it was
it.
Delicious.
I was gonna say, you
the
didn't
fruits
even
of
get
your
to
labor.
I didn't even get to eat it. But this is. But that's the thing is that I don't think I think I just avoided it because I was like, I don't really need to know that. Like,
I was gonna say, would you have gone on that fishing trip after?
Yeah, it's like I already live on an island, and people are just like, you know, you're already there. There's a lot of stuff keeping you on the island already. External forces. Sharks, yeah, we don't need to. But, I mean, we never really worried about sharks growing up. We always worried in the beaches that we swam. It was always jellyfish. Stonefish that are camouflaged but have, like, they can release toxins when you step on them with your bare feet. So
Can you pee on those wounds as well to stop the sting?
You can, but...
It doesn't really do anything. You just pee on your friend.
It'll help you for a little bit, but you should still go... You should still seek treatment.
Right.
But yeah, so like I never watched it, and I really enjoyed it, and I was actually kind of surprised because I don't tend to enjoy... like the films pre-1980s, like those are all like I don't know what it is, like I have a hard time with some of it, but like for this particular one I was just like I was engaged the entire time, and I thought this was a great choice and a nice way to kind of end our summer.
Yeah, it's a great summer movie,
and
especially at the end.
entirely justified in like people who have like are afraid of the water and everything. entirely, like, I completely understand that. Because if I was in the theaters and I saw this, I would not want to go swimming either. Yeah. So,
yeah.
How did you come to Jaws?
So, Jaws, I thought it was a fun pick because when I made Shock Attack, my movie, I went back to Jaws to watch it for research. And I ended up watching it a bunch. And it was so much fun to watch that and, you know, throw a couple little things into my movie that, you know, little nods to it. But yeah, when I watched it again, and watching it this time again, it holds up so well compared to a lot of other movies that are made around that time period.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, I have to say that if it's not John Williams, if it's not for his score, if it's not for the Sharks theme, like, if you take it, I started kind of picturing what it would be like to watch those shots of, like, you know, something in the water without the iconic theme in the background. And I'm like, yeah, it would be completely boring because there's no tension being created. You don't even see the monster, the villain, the creature until more than halfway through the film. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like, you know, all of this hints at it, but yeah,
just through the musical cues.
Mm-hmm. And then you have these beautiful, like, adventurous flourishes when they're on their hunt and they're like chasing after Jaws. And it's just so fascinating, like, how, like, oh wow, like, this is definitely the man who wrote E.T. This is the man who wrote, like, in the Indiana Jones score. But like, and it just, for me, I was having a hard time.
Star Wars.
Yeah. And, like, it was just,
I mean, it's iconic.
Yeah. It was just having this hard time too with it, where I'm like, I know that this is a horror film, but, like, it's so bright and fun and adventurous in these moments with the music, which is what it's supposed to be, because they're on the water and a hunt. But, the music really made it, really is its own character.
The music, and I noticed this time watching it, the sound design. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed, but, like, they play up all, like, especially in the beginning, those crowd scenes, or, like, whenever there's people around, you always hear the people and their conversations in the background, even when the main characters are talking.
Yeah,
and there's something about it so loud in the beginning, like, so many voices in your head, that then when you go to the water stuff, it's so quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, when they're... After the second attack with the little boy, and then all of, like, the town council, all the business owners are in that meeting, and they're just talking about, like, you know, you can hear all of the conversations that they're having, and it's just like, wow, like, that's a lot of that texture that we don't really get even now with some modern films.
Yeah.
Because, like, I knew everything I needed to know about that one woman who when they were on the beach, she was just like, you know, oh, you're not an islander. You're not an islander because you're not from here. You're not from here. And then, like, cut to her later being like, are you going to close the beach or not? I need to know my motel. Yeah. And it's
right.
There's so much of the story that's told in these, like, background conversations that I just never noticed before until this viewing of it. Like, that it was just like, if you go back and listen to all those conversations happening in the background, even when he's talking to his wife or when he's walking, you know, along and they're making their plan, you still hear all these other conversations behind it, which I found really interesting because, yeah, you never really hear that.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting that almost gives, I guess, you know, a little bit more, like, the mayor, like, the decisions that he's making, I guess, you know, gives it a little bit more weight because of all these, all these people truly are concerned about, like, feeding their families, and, you know, they depend on this tourist, you know, stuff. You know, I'm sure there are people here in San Diego where, like, when we're excited when the tourist season ends, you know, we're like, oh, finally, you know. I mean, it's not like it's a big, huge difference, but there are people that depend on that. So, you know, I guess still I hate him, but I'm just saying because there's that pressure constantly. All these people are talking.
Yeah. Behind you.
And as someone who, like, used to work in, like, the hotel hospitality industry here, I can, like, it's definitely one of those things where you're balancing the, like, okay, the visitors that are coming in, but at the same time, like, you know, you also are a local, so, like, you have a different version of summer, because it's like, I don't really go to the beach in the summer. I go to the beach when it's still warm in, like, October or, like, you know, 2 weeks after the summer ends in, like, mid-September. I, you know, that's when I go, because I know that it's going to be quieter, it's not going to be as many people.
Yeah, or when it's, like, cold and windy and you know nobody's going to be out there, so you can enjoy it,
Exactly, but, like, and that's the other thing, is that you have, like, it's a different version of what you consider home and how you experience those things that the other people experience. Because when that scene in the film where it's the 4th of July and then like these fairies come in and it's like hordes of people, I was just like, this seems nuts. Like, when you're talking about the mayor, it's like knowing that those people are going to show up no matter what and all of them are coming to be in the water and we can't be in the water. Like, I don't envy that decision, but at the same time, you know, people died, so.
Yeah. And are continuing to
and
die.
Are continuing
you
to
can't
die.
Deny it anymore. But it's like, so Jaws is, so we're using this to kick off a section of Fright School with what's known as natural horror. So stuff that involves either like animals or we've seen like with plants, like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes or Day of the Triffids. But we're going to focus exclusively on animal horror for the next few episodes. And obviously, you're drawn to this. You made a creature feature, as these are also sometimes known. So, why out? Like, you know, because we always, when we reach out and have somebody come on as a guest lecturer, as a substitute professor, you know, pick something you like. So, why Jaws? Besides, you know, like the influence it's
had. I thought it would just be a really fun one. There's a lot of shark movies out there now, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, we got them in tornadoes. We got them all over the place. But this one is still.
Yes.
All of them.
It's like
all of them.
It's so fun to go back and revisit kind of the big main one that kind of kicked off a whole. I mean, sharks are just really in right now. They're really big. But it's like, I love this movie. I always go back to it, definitely around summertime. I think it's really fun to kind of go back and watch it.
Do you remember the first time you saw it?
Oh, I don't remember how old I was, but I was definitely much younger. Yeah, but I wasn't one of those kids who saw it like really early, and then didn't go into the water. It's probably good that I didn't see it at a very young age because I wouldn't go into the water. I love this movie. I feel like the sound design, the music, the cinematography, like everything about it, and you know, just kind of it does feel like a fun adventure flick too. It's you know, it's just. You don't have to think too much about it, you know. It's just kind of a fun movie, you know.
Yeah.
And it's definitely like, I see this as like, okay, if someone wanted to I wanted to show them a horror film, and they're like, oh, but it's Jaws. I'm like, yeah, it's a horror film. Like, it's like, you know, slap your palatable suspense thriller thing on it, but at the end of the day, like
it's
you know,
a horror movie.
It's horrifying. A woman loses her child. Yeah. You know, I mean,
people's body parts are floating in the ocean.
Yeah, that scene with the leg. I had forgotten. I feel like I, you know, I probably this is, may have been the first time I actually really sat down and watched Jaws from the beginning to the end, unedited. I'm pretty sure I only ever saw it when it was like played. During the summer on television, heavily edited. So I never realized how like graphic it was. Like that leg floating in the
falling down to the
ocean floor. Yeah, that really kind of shocked me. I was like, oh wow, I don't remember that in this, you know. Which is funny because the Texas Chainsaw Massacre does not feature anything like that. There's like a little blood that's like splattered, but there's no the original 70s version, I should say, you know, the 1974. Nothing like that is in that movie. It hints at it. Yeah. But here's Jaws, which people would go, oh, that's not a horror movie. Like,
there's more blood and dismemberment in Jaws than there is.
Yeah, that shark is like, frightening.
Terrifying. it's fun because I feel like Jaws is one of those that people often forget about in the horror world a little bit, you know? And it's just, it's just always been one of my favorites. So
yeah, well, you know, and it's interesting because that's such like a perfect like breeding ground for horror is like you know the natural world. I think of like you know obviously like Hitchcock, The Birds, you know, being you know that was a pretty successful you know horror film that nowadays maybe somebody wouldn't think about. But I mean, if all the birds outside just decided to like start
attacking,
about
it all the time when you see like a bunch of those crows or ravens around, you're just like.
Yeah.
I have flashbacks to the birds. Yeah.
Yeah. So. It's like it's a very like tangible kind of threat if that, you know, were to happen.
So again, so another folksy story from my homeland, right? So back in the 40s, an invasive species of brown tree snake was brought to the island from a ship and basically wiped out like a lot of the native bird population. So when I grew up, I didn't really grow up with birds. And then I come here and like I see birds everywhere and I get kind of freaked out because I'm just like not used to birds and especially going to the beach and seeing like seagulls right up to you.
Man, yeah.
You know, these.
And
they're very
comfortable.
Super, yeah. And so I'm just like, wow, it's like I'm a little shocked. So I'm not saying that, like, I finally watch the birds, I'm going to be, like, even more traumatized. But, like, I get that. It's just, like, not experiencing it and seeing, like, it all around you. And, yeah, so I just wanted to add another folksy tale.
No, hey, we love. Hey, you know, that's great. You're tying that in, your experience, Joe. You're humanizing yourself there.
Thank you, Joshua.
I don't know.
With this film, it's like it's another fun horror trope that we talk about a little bit in Bird Box, where it's the white douche in the suit who come in and they're just messing everything up. So that scene where immediately Chief Brody's going out to buy signs and like is going to shut the beaches down, and then like these four men in suits come and they're just like, well, now don't be doing that because our money, we don't got no money now. And
yeah, they even get the coroner to like change, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, no, clearly this woman was eaten by a shark. Or maybe not.
And then he like goes off to the end of the ferry and just kind of stands backwards like, I'm going to lie and then stand over here and not face you anymore because I can't handle that I'm lying right now. Yeah, it was, it's very much douche in a suit, just like,
yes.
Yeah, but money.
But money, but this time it was like, but people's livelihoods,
yeah.
But these families that live here are, they're, what are we going to do about that? And I'm like, well, if you don't address, if people get eaten, then they'll never come back.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and I just kept thinking about too, is all those people, it was like once the shark was out and they were like, money, you get a reward if you catch the shark. It was like the gold rush of shark hunters. And I was just like, all those people are booking hotels and buying food. I'm like, so you kind of still have that anyway without having to open up the beaches. I mean, yeah, you might not be the next big spring break place.
Exactly. But again, it's also that like at that time, it's just like that respectability thing, right? Like we don't want to be known as the town where people can hunt sharks. Whereas now, like, oh my gosh, like there's a whole... There's like a whole subplot of a Los Spookies episode where it's like, we're the town with the sea monster. Like you capitalize on the crazy.
Everyone learned to capitalize on like, oh yeah, our hotel's haunted. Come on down. Like,
yeah. Do you want to see it? Like, we would love to show you our haunted hotel and, for $300 and 99 cents a night or... Yeah, but it's like it's that whole thing where it's like, Amity means friends, enmity means friendship. And I'm like, you're in trying to preserve this like pristine image of your idyllic, seaside town, island town, like you are also killing it because
You're putting real lives in danger.
You're putting real lives in danger. Yeah. And then like, he kind of humanizes himself when they're in the hospital and he's like, it was my family on that beach too. And I'm like, yeah, but you obviously didn't care.
Yeah, I know. That was so funny. It's like,
little late.
you really didn't care that your family was on the beach until right then. He like had to see the shark before he believed it or something. But.
Yeah, he needed to see the people running away or see how much like, because initially it's the prank by the two kids and you had to see it for himself. Like, oh, this is like a real thing. I can't just, I can't back down from this.
I'm like, there's a hole in the boat. Do you really need to see the one little tooth? Like there's a massive hole in a boat that looks like a big bite mark.
Oh yeah, that whole thing.
There's a man's head flying around like,
that was pretty gruesome.
It was
too.
Super
with his eyeball. And
I read something that they shot that part that where the head pops out. They actually shot it at the editor's home, like in her pool.
Yes,
because Steven Spielberg he wasn't happy with what they had.
Yeah,
so they did a quick little reshoot in her pool in Van Nuys.
Yeah, filled it with powdered milk or something.
Did
something to make the water look the right consistency.
I always love that kind of stuff, like that's why I love Evil Dead and stuff like that too, is I just always love hearing those behind the scenes stories where it's like, okay, well let's make this work, let's go shoot this in a pool.
Well, see, and that's kind of what when we had you on previously to chat, it's like when you working in, if you're going to do something on the water, like, is that your option then if you need to do reshoots or you need to do something like, oh, we'll just find somebody's pool and fuck it up. Fill it with,
Fill it with some milk.
Fill it with milk or, pour a bunch of algae in it or whatever. I don't know. It's like, what do you do when you got to, make it work?
Yep.
So
I was going to say, I'm like this. It's so, I loved the unhinged Richard Dreyfuss character. I was just like, I don't know what to make. Like, with Quinn, you know, I know what to make of that. But with Richard Dreyfuss, I
had
no idea.
That Ahab, like, yeah.
This, like, Ahab complex. Like, I have no, like, but with him, I had no idea. Like, are you a thrill seeker? Are you obviously, like, really rich? So you can, so, you know, when he's like, well, how much do I have or how much does the whole family have? I'm like, I love this because it was, it also wasn't like this, like, kind of, like, in films, it's like he would be like the second to last person to die, mm-hmm. or because he's like, you know, sniveling for whatever reason, or and there was no like, I thought he had like a nefarious backstory, like he wanted to, like he wanted the shark to kill people, but that surprised me that he was like, no, I'm definitely like, it's gonna be the three of us and we're now this like, you know, triumvirate that's gonna
go.
Yeah,
he's 100% for Andy for stopping
exactly. Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting because that's not where I initially saw it going, and that surprised me, but. His whole portrayal of it was just like, it was like, I'm here for this. I'm here for, I wasn't necessarily on board for Chief Brody, but like when he came in and Mr. Hooper came out, I'm like, yes, I'm here.
Yeah, there's a couple of, you know, so different analyses that we can talk about with this movie. So I want to come back to that, the three guys, definitely. But real quick, I thought this was interesting in reading that, ideologically, the film came out like right after like Watergate. That was still very fresh in mm-hmm. people's mind, like the scandal of it, and this idea that, you know, something is as what do you want to say, like the presidency, like it's such a an important institution, and that good people would be president, and they wouldn't be doing bad things. I know this isn't complete insanity now, you know. You know, but at one
what?
Time, people
presidents do bad things,
right? You know, exactly. You know, but this idea that really crushed so many people. You know, like that like that Nixon was involved, and that it was this huge conspiracy, and that it was real. You know, it wasn't just made up by people that were enemies of Nixon. You know, or whatnot. But that this was, you know, something real. So in Jaws, you have like this community coming together and stopping this. You know. This invading creature, this thing that is destroying their, like, the idyllic town that you talked about. Like, and we're all friendship and love here, and you're coming in with this, you know. I thought that was kind of an interesting, just, you know, to kind of set it in, like we've talked about, like, cultural anxiety, you know, to set it in the 70s in this aftermath of Watergate and having so much trust destroyed, you know, at least mm-hmm. for some people.
There's
know,
nothing
plenty
safe.
Of other people were
nothing
like,
is safe, nothing is sacred. Like,
yeah.
Summer is for fun and playtime and like, no.
This is another horror film in broad daylight.
Yeah.
This thing is attacking people without, you know, having the decency to do it at night, you know. So I thought that was kind of a very interesting, you know, just positioning of Jaws, that it's, you know, after this, and that, yeah, there's this whole attack on, you know, what otherwise seems like an idyllic life, at least for all the white people in the movie. All the white people and the strong males. The other thing I read to sort to analyze the movies, to go back to like where you're talking about the three guys, you know, you have like the wealthy guy, you have like, you know, the middle class man, the every man, the, you know, represented in the sheriff, and then I forgot his name again. Quinn.
Quinn. Yeah.
Quinn. As
oh no, Chief Brody is the sheriff. Is
right,
the
is the sheriff,
police,
and
yeah.
then the third guy, that like, the Ahab like guy. he's kind of like the lower working class sort of person who's closer to the shark, because so it's like an idea of like the shark represents this like unbridled primal masculinity, and so they're fighting to stay cultured and civilized against this force. So thoughts on that? So because then I want to pivot to another thing that I read in the same article about gender, but first let's discuss that a little bit.
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, that's not anything I was thinking about,
because the Ahab guy like dies.
Yes,
and he's closest to who the shark is.
Yes, he's closest to the shark, and then you have Richard Dreyfuss, who, you know, his power and wealth comes from his knowledge and his power comes from his knowledge and his wealth, not necessarily like him as a physical person.
Right.
Even though, you know, he's not weak by any means, but like compared standing next to Chief Brody, he's like more diminutive.
Well, and he's still sharing his battle scars.
Yeah.
Like he's still right there. The two of them are at the table, right? But he can, he's kind of that guy in the middle who's kind of still struggling to like one up the other guy, but you know, also trying to remain civilized.
Yeah, they're all trying. Like they're all sitting at a table having drinks, and then you have Brody, who you know is this person who's supposed to be this like you know this paragon of strength, but also is haunted by like you know is haunted by a previous experience. I guess drowning, I think, is what his wife said. Like he had said that he doesn't like the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his thing, is that like, you know, my enemy now is in the water and now I have to go to
He has to
face it and face his demons and overcome them, just like, you know, just like Sydney. just like a lot of our final girls. But that's interesting, that whole like the shark as a metaphor for like unbridled masculinity.
I feel like that scene in the table where they are comparing battle scars is like the perfect place to compare that theory, because
yes,
it really is there, you know, this one upping that's happening at the table, and Brody just kind of looks around like, well, I don't have anything that I can contribute right now.
I was a New York City police officer. I don't think I need to justify.
I don't have any physical scars to show right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's kind of he's almost not even engaging in that game. And then, yeah, in the end, spoiler alert, you know, then we lose the one who is the most of the toxic masculinity. The guy in the middle is like hiding under a seaweed chunk somewhere behind a rock or something
yeah,
under the
right.
water. So he survives, but kind of just barely. And then Brody is the one who actually overcame it. So that's really interesting because, you know, with him, he's the one who would have like won the war of being civilized, right?
Yeah. And with Quinn's story about the USS Indianapolis, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So his story about that, I was like, okay, I think he's gonna die, because I feel like, you know, that's his like that's karmic retribution for like, or not, like he has this survivor's guilt, but now he's gonna now it's just gonna take him over.
He'll finally like meet his ends with the shark.
Exactly the way it was supposed to happen.
Yeah,
you know,
way.
He's gonna be final destination.
Final Destination style.
Yes.
The shark is coming.
Yes.
Well, again, and that also ties to like to Ahab, you know, because you know that sort, which is one of the like literary references that Jaws is making here, you know, because he's so dedicated to finding, you know, and to seeing
it
this through.
His undoing, yeah.
But yeah, of course, like you know,
like destroying like, the communication device and
yeah.
whatever. Like I'm gonna get the shark no matter what. Even if it kills me,
yeah.
I don't care what happens.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
That's what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, they did save $10,000 because they didn't have to pay.
Yeah,
him.
That's true.
Hey, there we go. Good job, Joe. Looking on the bright side. You and the mayor.
Hey. Don't compare me to a douche in a suit.
So there's this article. It's from The Take. It's called "Why Does Bruce the Shark's Gender Matter in Jaws?" This is by Savannah Teague. It was published in 2015, so November of 2015. So you know, pretty good relevant outside. We're excited here. So it's looking at a little bit of like the masculine thing, but because there isn't, although they refer to it, I guess the novel that this is based on by, what was his name? Bletchley?
Peter Bletchley.
Yeah.
He calls the shark a he in the book, but they don't really make it explicit in this film, I think. I mean, maybe they say he, but I mean, they don't know.
They are consistently gendering the shark as he.
Yeah. But it was just sort of interesting to kind of look at it. There's this, you know, if it was female, like you could look at sort of Barbara Creed's idea of like the monstrous feminine, and that it's these like three men battling, you know, this destructive female energy. This idea like the shark is the vagina dentata, like, you know, it's that.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly, that kind of idea. Which I guess we were talking a little bit earlier, there's what's this, Brucetta, because I guess they called the shark Bruce throughout
the film. It was named after his lawyer, I think.
So yeah, yeah, something like that. So in the third movie, they like feminized it as
the shark in Finding Nemo. That's why
shark
is named
Bruce.
Yeah.
Ah, there we go.
There was a little nod to Jaws. Yeah. Even in Disney.
See,
even in Disney, they have it. I want to kind of tie this back to the interview we did with you, Jack, about your work, and you're working on a feature about werewolves, and, you know, we're talking about, here we are, like, for me, it's always, like, I love anytime I watch a creature film where it's like, no, it's spoiler alert for the late 90s Godzilla, where it's like Godzilla's like a female, like, or mm-hmm. they
or
like,
the Jurassic Park,
yeah,
or Jurassic Park,
Park
where
yeah.
it's like they're female because they're more ferocious, and they're that maternal kind of, it's the ferocity of maternal instinct that mm-hmm. that we're attaching to it. And it's interesting because, like, I feel that in this film the shark is gendered immediately as a he, because you know, for better or worse, you have only men can access this kind of ferocity with that's mm-hmm. unprovoked. Whereas if it's from a feminine creature or feminine context, female identified, what have you, it has to be provoked in some way. Like,
yeah.
there has to
like
be
there
a
has
threat.
To be a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah, behind it. Yeah, that's why I wanted to explore that in my movie is because when you do kind of put a gender on the creature or whatever mm-hmm. it is, oftentimes if you go female, then there's all these other things that are already built into culture that well, then if it's a woman, you know, shark or whatever it is, then it has to be this and this, and it has to have
has
this
to
reason.
Be a mother, has to be
yeah
this.
It's
yeah.
usually maternal, it's you know, there's all these things that go with it. And of course in nature, obviously a big part of animals is reproducing, and there's a certain way to go about it. But if you look at some of the animals in nature, they are super, I mean, they're just so vicious. The
yeah.
females are more vicious than the male counterparts, but we automatically identify that veracity with male.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, unless it's protecting the children, then it could be a female.
Yes.
But otherwise,
yeah.
they don't get that vicious. Females don't get that vicious, which is completely untrue, especially when you look at animals in nature.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I think that's what this paper is trying to talk about, in the sense of, like, again, there's these, like, three men, you know, these everyday, you know, the everyday guy, and then, you know, these other extremes of men who are fighting against this wild, uncontrollable feminine force, mm-hmm. you know, that they have to tamp down and control and stop, you know. And I just thought that was an interesting reading, you know, while watching Jaws. And again, because of the nature of our podcast, and as, you know, queer people, you know, kind of looking for interesting, you know, twists on the story, or, you know, I was sitting there watching it and I'm like, is Jaws a she? Could Jaws be a she? So I start looking that up, and that's uh-huh. what kind of brings me to this article and talking, you know. And that's been something that we've discussed, you know, in the past on shows like The Monstrous Feminine, and this, like, fear of the wild mm-hmm. woman.
The wild woman, yeah. Which is why I'm going to make a movie with a bunch of wild
right,
women.
Right,
yes.
Yeah, because it is. They're always kind of, yeah, there is this fear, but it's not, it's like kind of an unnatural feel, and it's fear about, you know, women unhinged and women explore, like, just women kind of being let loose, because that veracity is in there. Mm-hmm. It's typically either held down by, you know, whatever is going on in society, or, you know, it just hasn't been let loose.
Yeah.
You know, because that animal nature is in all of us, just in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I love also werewolf movies, because it's like, how do we tame this darkness that's inside of us?
Yeah.
And it's always about trying to control the monster, as opposed to, and where it gets really fun, especially with werewolf movies, is that when you just allow it to just be,
and you just learn how to live with it. Which is kind of, if you do that take on Jaws, instead of that creature being inside of you, they're having that struggle just externally with
yeah.
you know, the creature mm-hmm. out there in the water. But you could definitely look at it the same way, where it is that kind of inner struggle constantly. And it's like, does it win you over and take over like it does with the captain? Why am I blanking on his name
yeah,
right now?
Yeah, Quinn.
Quinn.
Quinn, yeah.
Quint. It's like weird. Quint. That's why.
It's
not,
there's that
yeah.
T at the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does
Robert
it does
Shaw's
finally
Quint.
take him over, but it doesn't get to our
yeah.
hero, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, exactly. I just, you know, again, I thought this was sort of interesting, you know, reading of the film, you know, about masculinity. Because either way, regardless of the gender of the shark, and I guess it is more explicit. We were talking earlier in the sequels, like the third one or something.
Yeah.
It is explicitly a female. Regardless, Jaws is sort of reaffirming ideas of like a certain type of masculinity keeps order. You know,
yeah.
keeps life in order, you know, and the guy who gets out at the end and is the hero is like just that, you know, this certain type of everyday man, you know.
Protecting his family.
Yeah, protecting his family, and that's what keeps society in order, and so we have to tamp down any wild, you know, like that is the enemy, the other, you know, keeps it, and I think Jaws, you know, it's about that, in that, you know, if we're going to analyze it. Any other thoughts, any other things that we can pull from Jaws that you were thinking about while watching Joe, or you know, Jacqueline?
Well, I mean, it now makes, you know, it makes entire, like, complete sense why they have it. They still have it to this day on the Universal Studios tour, on the studio tour.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What do they tour? I don't know. I've never been.
So the Universal Studios has, like, a studio lot tour that...
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you're going through and it's like they're actually filming shows, but sometimes most of the time it's just like it's actually like a ride. And now I was talking to someone and they were like, yeah, it's like an hour long ride now. And I remember going on it as a kid back in the 90s, and they have like, oh, and you know, we're passing by this pond, and they're talking about Jaws, and then you see like a fisherman like go under with bubbles of red blood.
Yeah, they have, it's like the now we're going into Amityville, and you go in and you see the barrels, and then you see, I think, a pier break. Like, there's a few things that happen.
You see Bates Motel from Psycho.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a that's why I do like going to Universal Studios, is I'm a total nerd for the back lot, even though, you know, a lot of it's, you know.
Yeah.
They have a lot of it that's just kind of, yeah, more of an attraction now than it was before. Before it was felt a little bit more.
Like you're
active.
Actually in the back lot.
Yeah.
It downpours on you. Out of nowhere,
you're
know, stuff like that, like movie magic stuff.
Oh, okay.
But with the Jaws stuff, like you can you'll be crossing, like, and then you see like, oh, Jaws, like where'd he go? And then all of a sudden, the shark is right next to you, like an animatronic shark.
Oh,
is
wow.
Like coming for
the track, like breaks down a little bit, so you're like almost water level.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
and
breaking
then,
out the
yeah
the
his
Jaws
little shark. And
I'll
so
take a picture of this and put it on.
So he's the shark will come, and then they've done some other things. Last time I went on the tour, they took us through like we were in Wisteria Lane, and then we turned the corner, and all of a sudden it's a crash scene from War of the Worlds with like a plane crash scene, and
yeah,
and
they
it
just
shows
keep adding
things, and it's really cool how they're doing that. They're showing the movie magic, and you can like experience it right there as part of the tour. So
well, like Wisteria Lane, that's like I think even actually that. The movie I was talking about, my mother's a werewolf, or what, I can't remember. it was shot at that house where The Burbs was, and every, you know, it's like you just keep seeing that same house and all these different movies from that era, you know?
The same, like, the same, like, town square that from, like, Monster Squad and Back to the Future and, from Fright Night, like, it's just like, oh, that looks like,
right,
we built that looks like the clock tower. Yeah.
And we're gonna use it to death.
We'll use it over and over.
Anyone want to go swimming?
no, thanks.
You know, yeah, I, growing up, we had like a man-made beach in, Ohio called, Caesar's Creek. And so, and they had fish and stuff in it. So like, you know, I remember seeing Jaws, and then like we'd go out and you did kind of have that like freaky sensation, especially because something might actually swim by like some kind of seaweed might wrap around
my uncle had one of those dark bottom pools when I was little.
I
used to always be so terrified that there was something under there because you just couldn't tell.
Couldn't
you know?
See.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, the one thing that I did find really interesting watching again with Jaws was actually... kind of all of the masculinity that was on screen, especially the whole like third act basically where they're just on the boat together, and then the shark's a dude, and it's just
shark's a dude too
and it was just really interesting just seeing those characters interact with each other out in the middle of nowhere where they didn't have kind of all those eyes on them, and they were able to sort of, you know, even though they were kind of doing it still in their way, but sharing their battle scars. But I mean, Quint, one of the super masculine characters, opening up to his friends. You know, like,
yeah.
I feel like you don't see kind of true emotional scenes between guys very often. So I thought that was really interesting too this time around.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's that sort of like brother in arms kind of, you know, thing that, like, you know, people who have been like in the military or have worked in other, you know, that sort of thing where, you know, you have that common experience. And so, yeah, it does provide that opportunity to have. That's, you know, that is a good point. It's not like it's necessarily toxic, you know, not all forms of masculinity, you know, by definition have to be toxic or wrong or damaging, you know, but I don't know. Then again, like,
but it's just
a little messed up.
I think in that, to that point,
yeah,
it's just kind of overwhelmingly masculine.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that whole, it's like the moment they go out on that boat, it's just
dripping with masculinity.
Yeah,
like good or bad. It's just, it's all there. And I just thought that was interesting because I do like looking sort of at some of those things in gender, and then I enjoy flipping it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, seeing that, I'm then like, okay, this gives me ideas for when I create something, still having some of that masculinity, but if they're female characters, why pull back? We can still play with some of those different ideas, and, you know, like the toxic masculinity, obviously you wouldn't really put that in the female characters, but just kind of some of the interactions and the way they interact with each other, and, you know, you can kind of push back against sort of those views, you know, that people have.
Well, I think The Descent is a good example of
I love that movie.
You know,
yeah,
because it's such
example.
Like, because they're such like, I mean, you know, they're freaking like going into these like caves and doing something that is so physical and active, and, you know, that I think that you normally would identify with like a group of guys doing. It's like these group of girls who women who love to do this kind of stuff, that are like, what kind of sports, what do they call that?
Spelunking.
Like, well, yeah, but like extreme, like sports.
Extreme spelunking.
You know, it's like they're not
extreme.
Like, yeah, they're not playing softball on the weekends.
Yeah.
You know, they're cave diving or whatever, you know, spelunking. I love that. You know, we're like, this is a very extreme sport, you know, and it works really well in that film, you know.
Well, and it's like, you know, when they're sitting at the table comparing battle scars, it's like, I've done that with friends, you know, female friends of mine, but you don't really see females doing that on camera ever, you know, so it's kind of just
it's
being like,
emotional.
Oh, here's where the blind spot is a little
scars.
Bit. Yeah, right? Let me open up my
these
heart.
Are my, my emotional
let's
words.
Cry together. Yeah, no, it's, you know, I've definitely had plenty of experiences with women where we're totally sharing paddle scars, and it's like you really do see, oh, I haven't seen this on camera much before, so now I want to make sure and address that over here, you know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to look at sort of the masculine side of things and be like, okay, how can I kind of break some of those barriers that are up because we just don't see it in culture, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's like, you know, I know all those women. Like if the guys in this movie were women, I still know them.
Oh,
I know a woman just like
even
Brody.
A Quint. I know.
Yeah.
A Quint,
oh yeah. No, I know a couple of Quints.
I know some Quints.
You know, what is it? Lesbian moon. That's the new thing, by the way. I'm now a lesbian moon. You know, I'm orbiting.
I thought you were like
just in general, my whole life, like the first gay bars I ever went to were lesbian bars, and I've spent like my whole
oh I thought
almost
you meant
life,
like
you know?
You're like a gay sun and then like a straight rising and then a lesbian moon. I thought
right,
that's what you meant.
Moon, yeah. But no, just this idea that's like, yeah, I've met plenty of women who are like, you know, again, like in the Navy and the military, you know, that are very hardened and have had these experiences that are very extreme that I'm totally alien to me. Like, I definitely would not volunteer to go out on a boat and on a shark.
Yeah.
No, not doing that. I'm going to stay here on the beach with the binoculars and looks like they're making it. Yeah, not interested in that. But it's like, I think that you could flip and tell still a really engaging, interesting story, you know, if you did have all, you know, a cast of women in this.
Well, it's like, and even if you're not flipping the actual movie, it's just like, yeah, how many times do you see a scene like that with women where they're not, even if they're opening up emotionally like Quint does, where it's not some big, you know, I don't know. I feel like it always looks the same if it's women opening up. It doesn't look like that, you know,
on
camera.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's just too often considered like a fluke, too. Because, again, to bring up Alien, which, you know, Jaws had a major influence on in not showing, you know, the creature till really late in the film. You know, there is something very cool about Ripley where she's not that, you know, usual, you know, she's making strong decisions that are not based on emotion, not based on, like, you know, because I mean, if you're trapped on a boat or trapped on a ship or trapped on a spaceship or whatever with a group of people, you're probably considering them family,
yeah,
you know, and
yeah,
that the idea is that, you know, a strong woman in power might, you know, try to keep the family together. Instead, she's like, no, fuck you. You went out there, got some kind of space creature on you. I'm not letting you back in here.
I'm not letting you back in this thing.
You know, she has to make that kind of strong decision. And it's like, that's not, you know, there are plenty of women that are like, not all women have to, you know, I guess it's just going back to kind of what we were talking about. Like, there's people in general across all genders.
Yeah. Women and men who act more masculine or feminine or whatever, you know, whatever you want to define
Defy
it as.
Roles,
but it's like we just don't see that range a lot of times in stuff even now, especially now. It's like almost like we went backwards a bit with it.
Yeah.
It's really weird right
it
now
is.
If you watch some of the pop mainstream stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah, it's like, and yeah, it's like we think that we're getting, you know, and again, I think it is in the indies, and I do think, you know, it's out there and we can find it, and certainly on television, you know, I think Netflix, things like that, you know, because there's maybe, well, I don't know, maybe you could speak a little to that, because I mean, I like to think that it seems like there's more risk, like, taken, because, like, especially with Netflix, it seems like they have so many different kinds of movies on there, but I don't know, maybe that's also.
Yeah, I think with, like, the, whenever you're dealing with studios or bigger corporations, they're always going to be more on the lookout for, like, what's going to lose me that, you know, that sponsorship, or
right,
what if we do this? Is this person over here going to think it's okay? So there's a lot more rules, I feel like, in the mainstream stuff. They're
regardless,
not willing to take as many risks, where if you're, you know, crowdfunded, or if you do have an investor, but they don't really have anything but just want to make good art, then you're able to take those risks and go, you know, go explore more.
Yeah. I wish that we would see, you know, more of those kinds of stories getting told in the mainstream, because they do exist, and there is obviously, you know, there are successful examples, but again, that's kind of the thing. It's like, you know, people go, oh, well, it's a fluke.
Mm-hmm. Well, even this movie, even though it was a studio movie, the only reason they were able or willing to take a chance was because it was a bestseller novel. And so then they're like, okay, well, there's money here, so now we'll go do this. And, you know, I think if it wasn't for all of these accidents and mistakes, even, it would just be a completely different movie that happened on set. So it's like they took the initial risk because the money was there. And then I think a lot of other stuff, they were just trying to salvage what they had already put into it. So they were probably just happy when Spielberg finally had a movie to give them. So sometimes because of all those mistakes and stuff, you get away with more because the studio or whoever is just like, okay, yeah, just get it done. You know?
Yeah, I would get. Yeah,
we
that's
need
true.
It. We need it out now.
Yeah, I was reading that because they was like 100 days over production.
Yeah, they just had
so many issues.
So many issues. You know, boats breaking down, sharks breaking down.
Right,
like, and so it's
shark.
Like we would have seen more of the shark if that shark was working, which actually would have been a disservice to the movie.
Yeah,
you know, it was just. I didn't get to talk about it when we were talking about my movie Shock Attack, but like all of the boats broke down on us. Boats were floating away in the middle of a shot. Like whenever you're dealing with boats, there's going to be issues no matter what. I mean, one time we were even stuck, like, I don't even know. It was just like probably 5 or 10 feet from the dock. But because of that, we were stuck on the boat until like an actor jumped out and got another boat and like came back. So it's like there's always going to be issues on the water, but they had like... they were plagued with issues.
Did they benefit, like, those examples of what you're talking about on Shock Attack, did they benefit the film in any way? Was any footage or anything from that you were like, oh, actually, this might be kind of cool? Or did it lead you to making any decisions? Because obviously with Jaws, they made decisions based on...
mostly just funny outtakes and stuff. But yeah, I mean, the decision where our puppet kind of broke down, even though it was more of a... operated by man, not, you know, I think Jaws was like Bruce was on a track and some other stuff. That's why actually I was watching some behind the scenes thing, and they said that's why they chose that location, because the sandy bottom floor was high enough that they were able to put the shark track on.
Okay, yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, like because of the eel not working properly, we had to go CG, and there's some stuff that's actually really fun about that and work better, where other stuff I still would really love to have.
Yeah.
I love practical effects, so.
Yeah.
Well, and this is a good time for that. We are seeing a lot of cool movies that are embracing the practical effects again. And
well,
doing
it in camera. And it's like, because if you look at Jaws, like that shark, even though you can tell it's mechanical, but it's not nearly aged as much as if like some of the you know, super old CG stuff that you see, you're just like, oh, this is bad, you know. But when it's practical, even if it, if you can tell it's a puppet or you can tell it's mechanical, it still like holds up, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was talking about that the other day because Jurassic Park was on, and we have like a super high def, very, you know, fancy freaking television thing. And I was like, it's so interesting seeing it like, you know, this now. Whereas when I was a kid, it was so mind blowing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And now I'm watching it, and I'm like, it's. It we could use with a re, you know, maybe somebody should go through and remaster. Just do a little bit of an update on the paint job there. but yeah, I thought that was very interesting that, you know, that something that is so pointed at, like scholarly, influentially, if that's a word, you know, like all the things about Jaws that people love were accidents, mm-hmm. you know, like that the shark, you know, and you're right, because the more they use that puppet, the more ridiculous it may have looked if it was malfunctioned, they're having to deal with that malfunction. So it's just interesting that those mistakes, or not even mistakes, but just the Murphy's Law.
Yeah, just things not going to plan. Even like the shark cage, where I was always curious how the shark attacked the cage. Again, this like little behind the scenes. I have the collector's edition, so I started watching some of the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was actually when they were shooting the shark footage, the actor was afraid to go in the cage, so the cage was empty, but a shark kind of went in to go explore the cage and got stuck. So when it's thrashing around like that, the real shark, it was actually stuck, but it looks like it's attacking the cage. So they actually rewrote that whole part where he goes out of the cage and down and hides so that they could use that footage because it looked so good.
Because
all the real shark footage was shot before they shot the rest of it.
Yeah, I read that was like Australia or something. They were using
some kind of
particular shark, and that the cage was even... smaller.
Yeah, they made it smaller, and the performer was, I think, like 4'11" or something.
Yeah.
He was I think also it said somewhere that he played he was like Elizabeth Taylor's stunt person, or he would be the double for a lot of kids, or you know, so they used someone who was smaller, and then they had a smaller cage too because real sharks aren't as big as Bruce was supposed to be, which was he was supposed to be what, like 20 something,
25 feet long
and three tons.
I think the real shark that they were filming there was like maybe like 10 or 11 feet or you know something like that, but
See, I love all that kind of stuff, like especially in horror, because that is really, you know, horror is a genre of ingenuity, you know, and a genre of, you know, making do with what you got, you know, and making it work and having fun and exploring, you know, different options. Because a lot of times, you don't have some massive budget and you don't have, you know, so you really got to think about it. And some of the best movies that we have come out of just, you know, that kind of, you know, like what Jaws. Well, I mean, I'm sure Jaws had like a bigger budget, but just, you know, looking at some other horror that doesn't, because you're working with what you have, and sometimes
or you're just
that's
going with it, you know, because on a film set, everything's going to go wrong. That's the way it happens. So you just plan as best as you can, and then you just go with the flow, you know. So if something's going another direction, figure out how to ride that wave instead of fight against it, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that all these, like Jaws and all of those movies where they did that, it's really inspiring as a filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah, I bet. Huh. How cool. Well, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad that we did this. I'm looking forward to exploring more of this, like, nature versus man. it's all, you know, movies we haven't really done. Joe, are you excited?
No.
Yeah.
You're going to make me watch spiders, so.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do Arachnophobia. Yeah, we're definitely going to do
but
that.
But I'm excited for the other things, like, I mean, classics, Cujo, Birds.
Yeah.
All of that.
Oh, so good. Yeah. I love Birds. I love Hitchcock.
Yeah, yeah. We've not done too much Hitchcock, but we should. You know, but it's, you know, again, it's that, like you were talking about earlier, like, you know, the problematics.
Right. I mean, it's like, I love those movies, and it's like, am I allowed to, now knowing as
Jeepers Creepers, I love those movies so much. And to know like what the director and it's like, fuck, you know, dude, or Rosemary's Baby. Like it's one of my favorite movies, and it's just riddled now with all of this.
Yeah.
God damn it. This awful man.
Stupid man.
Stupid
blow up that shark.
Right.
Blow up that mess, that toxic masculinity.
Exactly.
Blow it up.
End it. All right. Well, thank you so much again for spending time with us and, you know, coming down here to hang out with us,
in
the library here. We're not in the bookmobile.
No, we're in the
we're in the actual studio. So again, you can find Jacqueline Chessen, GACLYNCHESSEN, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. I was like, oh, good.
on the Twitters and the Instagrams and the Facebooks and all of the social medias, all of the things. Be on the lookout because, yeah, she's going to do some real cool stuff that we can't wait to see and have you back on to talk about. So, Joe, be safe out there in the water.
Good night.
Good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
Ha 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 ha